When we think of youth in the church, I think we tend to think of our teenagers. We think of our Sabbath school because that's really where we focus over the years, many of our programs. That's where we play the sports and have the activities, and that's where we have the teachers that present their lessons. When they come out and they grow up and they become young adults, traditionally that isn't an area that we put much focus on. In the church today, we do look at the young adults in a particular category, and we look at it as a particular purpose. Because we're trying to take and transition then the children of the church as they grow up, and we're trying to prepare them ultimately to pick up the responsibilities that will one day be the teachers and the organizers and the administrators effectively functioning within the church. When we're young, we tend to look at life in totally different terms than when we're older. When we're young, we look at life in terms of our hopes and dreams. We look at life in terms of its potential. We want to experience good things. Young people look at life in terms of having fun to a large degree. When you're older and you look back, though, and I was asking yesterday, I called around to some of the members of the congregation up here, and I decided that I would only call a few of the people who were 70 or older because they have a different view of life. Do you think someone who's 75 looks at life and says, wow, look at the potential, look at how much fun it's going to be? They don't look at it the same way. They look at life as a series of experiences that they have already had, been there, done that, and some of them were good, and some of them were not good, and the good ones might have been wonderful, but indeed some of the bad ones were quite distressing. They look at life in a little different perspective. So I asked some of our older members in the congregation what their advice would be to those young adults in the church, what they would tell those people as they were starting out their lives. And I want to illustrate it as well in a little bit different way. One of the strange circumstances in life is that we have to make some of the most fundamental decisions that have the most far-reaching consequences when we have the least experience. From the age of, say, 18 or 20, in through basically our 20s, maybe our very early 30s, generally speaking, we make decisions in terms of marriage and education. We make decisions that affect our economics, opportunities to travel, the types of lifestyle that we will have access to, how we will live this life. And many of those decisions are fairly locked in place. We make them when we have the least experience. When we have the most experience, we have our advice to offer, but the choices are no longer left to be made. I want to read a letter to you that Michelle and I received from a friend of ours. He was more my friend in a personal way, went to college together, had a girlfriend before he came to college, and they decided they would come and go to school and they would be there together. And when they came to college, of course, there was a large social exchange in college. It was part of the culture and environment where literally as a man, as a gentleman, as a young man, you tried to get to know many of those ladies in a social way. Courtesies of simply escorting them to the Bible study, escorting them to church. There were club activities and meetings and many, many other things. And the ladies, in the same respect, had the opportunity to socially get to know many of the men in that way. Now, when this couple came to college, the man looked around and he said, well, looky, look. Look at all of these great blessings of social relationships. How about we fit into the system and get to know everybody? And the girl kind of said, well, how about not? How about you're mine and I'm yours and we just keep well enough alone? Well, some distresses later, some ultimatums were made, and it was, look, either we're together or we're not, and if we're not, then it's over. And the gentleman, early on in his life, a young adult, again, began to make some decisions that would impact the rest of his life. A few years later, I got a letter, again, addressed to Michelle and myself, again, a personal friend that we had kept touch with over the years. I want to read you a few of his comments in his letter. His greetings, I'm deleting anything that I can that gives any real identity in terms of location or the fact that he was in, you know, Cincinnati, Ohio, but he wasn't. Says, we were glad to get your feast card. We felt bad that we hadn't replied sooner. It would seem that back here, life would be so leisurely that you could find time for everything. They were in a rural environment and got out of the big city, and he said, you know, you'd think if you got back out there in the woods a bit, then life would slow down. He says, that isn't always so. Whether or not one's in an urban environment then doesn't necessarily change the pace of life. You just have different things to do. Along with trying to earn enough money to live on, you see, he left college after his freshman year because now there was duty and obligation that was going to be met, and they married. And they began then to build their family. Along with trying to earn enough money to live on, we have all the things to do to maintain our home and property. Babies occupy a lot of both mother's and father's time. He says, I'm writing right now. It's one of the few quiet times during the day. Our son usually goes to bed 6, 7:30, up around 6 in the morning. At 8 months, he's very active, must be attended almost every minute of the day. He naps in the playpen, or is busy in certain ways for very short intervals. The rest is personal care. I'm not sure when you last heard from us. I'll try to fill you in on some things you may not have heard. After spending a most unproductive year in school last year, we've moved back to our own place. Based on the events that have occurred since then, we're in some want of a state of indecision and are just staying put until we know exactly what we need to do. We've become very wary of any drastic changes because they had been advised of certain decisions that they needed to make, and they made certain decisions and it went against them. It says, we've become very wary of any drastic changes, with or without advice. The details are too extensive, would bore you to tears. I'll spare you that. At any rate, I start a temporary job on Monday for 6 weeks. And then I'm supposed to have another job after that ends. Nothing spectacular, but enough to live on, it appears. More education is out for now, so my earning potential may never be what it could have been, nor may I have the job that I should have qualified for. He was studying for a technical profession, and he aborted. And he said later, a few years down the road, it looks like I will never be able to qualify for the job that I might have had. I will never have that opportunity that might have been. So we learned that making certain decisions prematurely can very drastically affect people's lives for the duration of them. In your young adult years, you have the chance, the opportunity, and also the risk of making decisions that will affect your life for the duration. Your economic potential, your mate, your career, your opportunities, matters that affect your health. We attended the feast and were able to stay in someone else's house for a reasonable amount, or we would not have been able to attend on second tithe anyway. I believe we spent more than that amount anyway, since neither of us has earned very much this past year. The coming year looks to be starting off better. Your prayers are very much appreciated, as improvement of the job situation is still needed, as well as the necessity of deciding where we should live. Take care of yourselves. Write when you can. Thanks for remembering us. That wasn't the last letter. The letters that we received after that continued to show just an incremental decline in their circumstances in various ways. Letters like that, when they're personal friends, kind of tear at your heart because, again, we make decisions in our young adult years that impact us for the rest of our lives. And we need to be very sensitive about what those things would be. When I asked some of the older members of the congregation what their advice in these matters would be, I compiled those notes, and I want to address some of those issues here today, but I also want to look at Ecclesiastes 11, because there's a passage here in this chapter that encapsulated much of what they said. Ecclesiastes 11. Cast your bread on the waters, for you will find it after many days. What does it mean to cast your bread on the waters? When I was a kid in Montana, we used to take gummy bread, ball it up in our hands, and we'd throw it out in the creek, and the fish hatchery was just up the stream. And the fish would bite and eat the bread, and then we would put the bread on the hook and we would catch the fish. The point here is that if you put your bread out on the water, the fish will eat that. And the fish will increase and produce, and they will come back and be more fruitful and give you a return. It's talking about making an investment with something in your life that causes it to be more fruitful, not by holding it necessarily to yourself, in some cases by sharing it or even giving it away. But it says it will come back to you. Give a serving to seven, also to eight, for you do not know what evil will be on the earth. Make friends, help others, share with them when you have that to share, because you will be assisting them, and someday, frankly, you may need their assistance in return. If the clouds are full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth, and if a tree falls to the south or the north, in the place where the tree falls, there it shall lie. Effectively, so what? Because there will always be something happening that would seem to be an obstacle or something indeed that would need to be overcome. There's advice here in verse 4. It says, he who observes the wind will not sow. He who regards the clouds will not reap. Life happens, and we need to be diligent and pursuing our hopes and dreams. Do you know what many of the older people said? They said, have a goal and pursue it. Go ahead and pursue your dreams. They weren't saying, don't take a chance. They were saying, go ahead and pursue those things. But do it in a diligent manner. But be on your way, basically. You don't know the way of the wind or how the bones grow in the womb of her who's with child. So you do not know the works of God who makes all things. Again, it's saying that you need to do what you can. You need to take advantage of what's available. You won't know the end of the matter, but you have to start with the beginning. I have a friend who lived in a town that had a college right there in that town. And he didn't have the money or the means to go wherever he wanted. And so he tried and applied for, and through diligence, was able to get scholarship to the college that was right there in his town. It was a specialty college, and he went there, and he excelled, and he went on into the industry that college supported, and he excelled there as well. Why? Because it was what he had available to him. Was it because he went through all the possible professions and all the possible opportunities and decided what his ultimate wish and desire would be? It was more because it was available to him and he used it well. There's a saying that says to bloom where you're planted. You have to bloom where you're planted. You have to use what you have and use it well. Going on. In the morning, sow your seed. In the evening, do not withhold your hand. For you do not know which will prosper, either this or that. Try different things. Make many friends. Strive to understand many things. Because you don't know exactly what it is that will work in the end, or whether both alike will be good. Truly the light is sweet, and it's pleasant for the eyes to behold the sun. But if a man lives many years and rejoices in them all, yet let him remember the days of darkness, for they will be many. All that is coming, indeed, is vanity. There will be good times, and there will be bad times. There's a lesson in the bad, but that is carried generally with those who have lived their life and look back on their life in return. They indeed have something to share. Rejoice, O young man, in your youth. Have fun. Make your youth a time of great rejoicing. Let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart in the sight of your eyes. But know that for all these, God will bring you into judgment. It's not without account. It's not without measure. Therefore, remove sorrow from your heart. Put away evil from your flesh. For childhood and youth are vanity or temporary. They're going to pass away. You're not going to remain young. One day, you're going to be looking at life from the other side as well. Again, when I talked to some of the older members of our congregation, they said, set your goals, pursue them, make your goals realistic, but follow your dreams. Aim high, but aim. It's like the sign over the spittoon that says, you know, we aim to please, you aim too, please. Aim. Find out what it is you want. Maybe you won't be going for just one thing. Ecclesiastes says, go ahead, but scatter the seed. Get on your way, because there's no other way to get where you're going. The biggest risk sometimes that young people have in their lives is the failure to literally plan out their life and to just let it happen. The harder you work, the luckier you're going to be, if there's so much thing as luck in that sense, but that's simply the phrase. The harder you work, the luckier you're going to be. Those who have lived their life and are looking back at their 70-plus years, almost every one of them said, get a good education and develop skills so that you can be gainfully employed. They said to be careful with the finances. They said to choose your friends well. And you know what else they said? They said, seek out older people and let them advise you, because they have made mistakes and they have had successes and they have looked at their life in a different view. They're not looking at life as, oh, this is going to be fun. They're looking at life as, you know, that worked and that didn't. And they said, seek out us and let us advise you. They talked about preparing for marriage and being ready to really fulfill your role. They even talked about having a life outside of your work. And it was very, very strongly referenced, obviously, to keep God first, that there is no value in this life when you just live it for yourself. Why do we study the Bible? We have a Bible reading program, and we read and study the Bible. Why do we study it? Why do we come to church? We fight our way through the snow, and we come to church. Is it not so that we can take on this way as part of us? Is it not so that we can put God first in our lives? Look at Proverbs chapter 3, or Proverbs 3. It's talking about looking to God and trusting Him. Proverbs 3 and verse number 7. There's a caution here. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil. I hate to say, but at 52, I wonder if maybe I don't know less than I did ministerially, biblically, than I did 20 years ago. Because there were things I had more confidence in 20 years ago because somebody had said it was so. And on this day, I have to stop and say, is it indeed something that I absolutely can prove? And so I'm very careful in what I say because it has to be something that I can be assured of. It was so much easier 20 years ago to be assured of just about everything. And again, it makes me wonder sometimes. As I age, if I am not then maybe a little more cautious in that which I absolutely am convinced that I know. Part of that is simply putting on age. We look back differently than we look forward. Life changes. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil. It will be health to your flesh and strength to your bones. Honor the Lord with your possessions and with the first fruits of all your increase. So your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will overflow with new wine. Honor God. Give alms, so to speak. Be generous with your resources. Share. Help others. Make it a way of life, not just a moment in time. My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor detest his correction, for when the Lord, whom the Lord loves, he corrects, just as a father the son in whom he delights. Happy is the man who finds wisdom and the man who gains understanding. For her proceeds are better than the profit of silver, her gain than fine gold. She's more precious than rubies, and all the things you may desire cannot be compared to her. It's talking about the value of having the answer to the question. The value of knowing what to do in advance. Length of days is in her right hand, in her left hand riches and honor. Her ways are ways of pleasantness, and all her paths are peace. She is a tree of life to those who take hold of her, and happy are all those who retain her. You know, we really have to ask if God is truly first in our time and our focus. And if you're going to be making decisions that impact the rest of your life, then does that not want to be grounded on God's wisdom first? It is so critical, but it is a place that as a young person you have to arrive at. Is there compromise with the world? Is there a tolerance or an acceptance of the world's fashions and the world's trends? Is there a separation, a true separation in value system, or is there an identity that really should not be there? God is going to use those people who prepare themselves to serve him, obviously according to his will. He'll pour out his spirit in various ways. I want to look at a scripture in Acts 2. I realize that this is, as you might see, this is a dramatization. This is a little bit of an extreme example, but I simply want to illustrate a process that takes place when God fulfills his purpose. In Acts chapter 2, when the Holy Spirit was poured out at the temple here in Jerusalem, and then Peter stood up and he begins to quote from the prophet Joel, but it just says, Peter, verse 14, standing up with the 11, raised his voice and said to them, "Men of Judea and all who dwell in Jerusalem, let this be known to you, heed my words." He says, these men are not drunk, they're actually led by God. The Holy Spirit has been poured out on them, and this is what was spoken of by the prophet Joel. Now, this is talking about the end time under very dramatic circumstances, and this is a very dramatic fulfillment. But what it's showing is that to fulfill God's own purpose, he does pour out his spirit and give us gifts and abilities to fulfill his will. It'll come to pass in the last days, says God, that I'll pour out my spirit on all flesh. Your sons and your daughters will prophesy. We're talking about younger people by comparison to older people, that God would take and use them to represent him in some specific way. Your young men will see visions. Old men will dream dreams. And on my men servants and on my maid servants, I'll pour out my spirit in those days. Now, these days began here in Acts chapter 2. These days are going to also be complete before Christ returns. But it's saying that when it is according to God's purpose, he pours out his spirit and gives gifts in mighty ways. And he gives some of those gifts to his youth as such, or those who serve before him in that way. One of the things that many of our elderly people, again, were very concerned about primarily was that our young people would get a good education while they're young. Do you know why you have to get it while you're young? Do you know how much formal schooling I've had since I graduated from college? None. Now, I read all the time, and I study all the time. I can't go to ABC. I'd love to go to ABC. I would park there for the 6 months, and I would listen and learn just as we sat, those of us who went to Tacoma. I loved sitting in Tacoma, having someone teach me. I loved being able to take five classes of Roy Holiday's and boil them down into one sermon and then give it back. He did all my homework for me. All I had to do is take it and sort it down a little finer. I can't do that. I can't stop and back off from the life and the commitments that I have currently to go and do those other things. Some of those decisions educationally have to be done up front. There was another thing that we were taught because of Mr. Armstrong's vision of what an education should be. He wanted the college at that time to focus on liberal arts, which means to have a broader perspective than just a technical education. Because he wanted us to know a little bit about economics and business, but he wanted us to know a little bit about history, and he wanted us to read in terms of literature, and he wanted us to participate in many things. There were social activities, formal activities, and those were just as important as much of the education that we got from a book. And there was something there that was transmitted to the students who wanted it, who sought for it, that changed their lives. And it changed their lives at a time when they were making those formative decisions as what will I do in this flesh. And it was important. It was an important process. One of the things that a young person has to do is learn to discipline themselves. You grow up being disciplined by your parents. And the time comes when you're old enough to where that discipline changes and it has to be a little more at a distance because at some point it becomes a resentment if it's a little too personal and up close. And at some point in time, that young person then is on their own and has to make their own choice. You have to learn to discipline yourselves. A friend of mine was talking to his daughter one day, and the daughter was in school, and the daughter wasn't doing that well in school, and she says, "Daddy, you know, I wonder what college or university I might be able to go to." And he says, "I don't know that it's a question of which one you're going to go to. I think it's a question of if you're going to get to go to anyone." She said, "You're not doing well in school. Go ask your counselor, on what basis are you going to get into anything?" And she said, "What?" And she thought about it. And he said, "You know what? She got straight A's from that moment on." Now, it wasn't because he said the perfect word, but it was because the light bulb came on in her own mind. When I went to college the first time, I withdrew all of my classes because I was flunking out. Because it was so much fun to play pinball down in the student center instead of going to the semester final. I think I mentioned one time I was like, I don't know what it was, 15, 20 minutes late, 10, 15 minutes late for the semester final because I was winning on the pinball machine back then and I wasn't about to just throw the games away. So I had to clean the machine and then head to my final exam. So I withdrew from college the first time so that I would not flunk out. I came back to college and I got an A average. And the difference was, is that in the interim, somehow it came into my mind that if I did not personally succeed, then the failure would be forever. That if I didn't personally take the responsibility for those things, then the failure would be forever. And it wasn't because I lacked complete ability, it was I lacked discipline. Young people have to come to the point where they begin to discipline themselves. They need to take responsibility to pursue those specific job skills and to be diligent in them. And as they begin to build their lives, again, my focus on this is mostly to the young adult. They apply to us all in various ways, but at the point in time when we're making decisions that impact, again, the rest of our lives. Live frugally while your business or while your work is being built. Our whole society says, let's have a good time. Let's go party. This is a good thing to do. I want to go do that. And that is a caution that must be very much taken to heart. We must avoid that to advance. Proverbs, again, 24, verse 27. It says, prepare your outside work, make it fit for yourself in the field, and then afterwards build your house. Bring in the money first. Produce the income. Do the work and then buy the sports car. And then buy the ski vacation. And then buy the toys and the trinkets and all the things that we have learned to desire and appreciate. Verse 30. I went by the field of the slothful and by the vineyard of the man devoid of understanding, and there it was, all overgrown with thorns. Surface was covered with nettles, a stone wall was broken down, and when I saw it, I considered it well. I looked on it and received instruction. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, so your poverty will come like a prowler, and you will want like an armed man. There is a need for a young person to realize the discipline that is required and the diligence that is required to produce. And it is a time in your life when you have to internalize that and make it work. Even if you're not employed, even if you are not actively employed, still seek to help someone else. Make a contribution. In this life, we need to be producers rather than consumers. If you're not employed, then volunteer somewhere and help someone else. God gave record, Paul recorded it, but it said, if anyone will not work, neither shall he eat. It doesn't say that if you're unemployed, you can't eat. It just says that you ought to be producing and contributing, you ought to be helping, you ought to be accomplishing at any point in your time. Be careful to not take advantage, to live off of those benefits that others have earned. One of the people I call, one of the members I called on this yesterday said, look, she said, if they want to drive, then tell them to go buy their own car. Now that's pretty clean, right? If you want to drive, then go buy your own car. Because if you buy it, you'll take care of it. And if somebody gives it to you, you might take it for granted. So you just tell them, you can guess out of who that might have been. You tell them that they want to drive to go buy their own car. I thought, okay, that's interesting. I bought my first car when I was a senior in high school. I paid cash, and it was the money that I had saved up from mowing yards and from robbing banks and things. From, doing all kinds of menial chores and working in the bakery and washing the trucks, washing them in the winter on Sunday, and it's cold out there and sleeting, and you're out there washing the trucks. And you save it up, a dollar here and $5 there and $10 there, and you get a little pile of it, and you sit on it, and you don't spend it, and then you go pay cash. I bought my first car like that. Nobody ever helped me in any way. My dad found the car, but I bought it. I appreciate his help, but it was a blessing that I was able to buy it as well. One of the biggest risks a young person faces is debt. Debt. Credit is simply too easy. Stay out of debt, except possibly for buying a house one day, and maybe even for your education if you're going to be doing something that will pay it back. A friend of Michelle and I went to school to be a doctor, and he went under quite a bit to get there, but I'm telling you, he got out of there fast on the other end. Because we talked to him, and he kind of told us what the finances of this had been. But it was because where he was going to cover where he had been. It wasn't for consumption's sake. You shouldn't be buying a car on credit as a single person without a family to be responsible for, basically in this life. And I know that that goes completely against the grain. I mean, we have one car that's paid off, we have one car that's not. When I started getting mileage reimbursement to pay for the use of a car for business was the first time in my life that I bought a car on credit. And literally, it was in Lubbock, Texas, right before our transfer here, the first time I ever did anything but pay cash for a car. And all I can say is, young people, those are things you're supposed to have in place before you commit to additional expenses, before you marry, before you have babies, before you go under and make some other commitment some other way. Now, I know as we get to be adults, that we could all raise our hands, we got this on credit, we got that on credit. Fine. If you want good advice, go to Perry. Perry's been under and he's been up, and Gail and both. They've worked through this together and he knows both sides. But I have to say to the young adult, if you wanted to talk to every single person who was older, they would say, stay out of debt. If you want to buy something, you buy it by saving up and paying for it instead of buying it with debt. Because when you buy it with debt, you now have to pay the cost plus. You are in the hole, you are not ahead. You have satisfied your desire momentarily, but you have not advanced your cause. Young people grow up with a debt that is, with debt in their mind in terms of it's acceptable to be in debt because what? We want to have fun. We want to do things. We want to go places. And I have to caution you, and those who have been there would caution you, do not live off of debt. Live on less than you make. If you make a buck, live on 95 cents. Live on 95 cents. Again, make your purchases with savings, not with debt. Look at Proverbs 11, verse number 5, and notice the way this is referenced. He who is surety for a stranger will suffer for it. What does surety mean? Surety means that you signed on to somebody else's debt. You're the guarantee. Okay, well, let's just take this and apply it a little differently. One who hates being surety is secure. What it's saying is don't ever expose yourself to the penalty of debt. Now, somebody else you don't have control over. But when you sign on to a credit card company for debt, in order to have consumer items, which is, let's have fun, or I want to do it today, I'm not talking about an investment in a business where you have to make an investment and then there's a return. I'm talking about consumption. It says, do not effectively go into bondage to a stranger for a debt. Now, isn't that what credit debt is? It's bondage to a stranger for a debt. I know there's tough times, there's medical bills, there's issues, there will be crises. I'm not talking about business investment. I'm talking about consumption. Discipline yourselves to limit your demand for consumption to your budget. Pay your own way. If you want a car, then buy it. Because when you get it, you'll care for that car in a different way. A wage alone is generally not going to provide for your future needs. You go downtown, get a job, and they pay you X dollars an hour. You can say, all right, I'm getting X dollars an hour, and I'm going to be careful. I'm going to save 10% of that for my own personal investment. You start setting the 10% aside. Will that 10% pay for your future needs? No. Unless you're making huge money, you will never save enough money to pay for your future needs. It doesn't happen generally in this life. Do you know where the money comes from that has to pay for your future needs? There has to be increase. You have to take the money that's there, and it has to begin to make money for you. People do that when they buy a home in this country, generally speaking. The market in Spokane finally ticked up this last year or so for the first time since recorded history, you know, since the Indians were fishing on the river. And I heard that long, long ago there was a big spike and then it kind of leveled off. But we've been here 7 years, it's been flat the whole time we've been here. It was flat when we got here. And all of a sudden, I'm looking at my house, because we didn't buy a house just so that we'd have all this increase. We never get increase on a house. They closed the air base when we lived in Lubbock, and I mean, we basically got out of our mortgage what we put in it. But we had a 13-year mortgage. And we had it, half of it basically, or at least, I'd say a third of it, because we were there 6 years, we had a third of it paid off as we walked out the door. Now, it was a cheap house. It was nice, it was cheap. But basically, we got our money back out of the mortgage and enough to pay the realtor and go our way and start up here. But I'm watching my house, and I'm watching the paper, and I'm watching what the realtors are saying, and I'm going, honey, we just made $5,000-$10,000, and I didn't do anything. I just sat here in this place, and somebody finally started buying things up. There are different ways in which we receive increase, but you have to start, first of all, with something that you own, and it turns around. I mean, there's people much smarter than I actually stayed with what little bit of savings they may have had in the market. I said, this is crazy. This is like roulette wheel watching this thing melt down. And so the retirement savings that we had set aside, I finally just took them out and set them away. And I've watched the market come up 25-30%. I said, this thing's crazy. But again, over time, there is increase. But the increase comes from taking something and turning that something into something more. Now, there's different kinds of increase. There's increase from labor that multiplies. It's like you can go out and you can hang sheetrock, or you can have a business where everybody else hangs sheetrock, and then everybody multiplies their productivity, and there is gain. But you take the risk, and you got to be smart, and you got to stay with it and make it work, because there's risk, and you could lose on the other side. But the fact is, that's what the elderly people said. They said, aim high. Go for your dreams when you're young, because they lay before you. They're not there when you're 75. Your dreams are already pretty well locked in place. And we accept that this life is temporary and that the kingdom of God is where we're ultimately going to be fulfilled, but we still live out this life. We pay for this year by year. And the opportunity to make those choices is when you're 20. If you don't take the right courses in the sixth grade, it's not going to kill you. If you don't have the right friend when you're in the eighth grade, you're probably going to recover. But if you make a serious critical choice when you're 20 and 25 and 30, you will pay for it for the rest of your life. Or if you fail to make a critical choice that you should have. Proverbs 14, verse number 4. Where no oxen are, the trough is clean. Life's simple, but you're broke. But much increase comes by the strength of an ox. By multiplying your energy in another way, then there's increase that can come. All of animal husbandry, all of the farming, I realize that that has been a very difficult profession in terms of the economics over the last years. But the whole concept of it is that you can plant a certain measure of seed and you receive increase from that. You'll never in this life basically cover your needs comfortably simply by receiving an ongoing wage. That, generally speaking, will never cover all that comes. Proverbs 27, verse 23. Be diligent to know the state of your flocks. Why? Because you're trying to recover increase from the investment of the flock. And so you watch them and you care for them and you make it fruitful and you protect them and you make sure they breed and you give them opportunity and you nourish them so that they will increase. Be diligent to know the state of your flocks. Attend to your herds. Riches are not forever, nor does a crown endure to all generations. When the hay is removed and the tender grass shows itself and the herbs of the mountains are gathered in, the lambs will provide your clothing, the goats the price of a field. You'll have enough goat's milk for your food and food for your household and the nourishment of your maidservants. Brethren, it's heartbreaking to be at the end of your life, figuratively speaking. I know we call, 70 is now middle-aged, I think. Yeah. 70 is not middle-aged. 50 is not middle-aged. Because Helen Duke lives to 100 doesn't mean I'm middle-aged. I have used up the majority of my life, and I'm young and spry. We have this culture where we want to always kind of talk like we're younger than we are. The fact is, those years are expensive, and you have to make those choices up front. I can't go back to school. I can't change the things that I have now basically available to me. My economics are basically set on a course that are going to be on a particular pattern until we finish this life. Now, I think of Glenn and Connie, and Glenn's up there, and I always tease Glenn about how old he is. You know, he's not young, and he's working full-time, full throttle, and looking at the finish of his pastorate at some point where he is, and maybe helping in some other place besides that when the time comes. Well, okay. But everybody makes a choice. And there are consequences to those choices. And many of those choices are made at the age of between 20 and 30. When I was young, we looked at 30 as the time when you dropped over the cliff. You remember some of you back then? You know, don't trust anybody over 30. You couldn't trust them because they're attitude changed. And you know what the change was? They became responsible. They became accountable because they realized the gig's up. I'm here. This is it. Now I have to you know, fish or cut bait. But there was this concept that kind of up to 30 you could kind of try things and do things and have fun and go on trips and travel and just kind of live this life. And all of a sudden, the light comes on at 30 that it doesn't work anymore. You can't do that forever, and you better get real. Well, I can only warn the young adults. 18 to 20 is the time to get real. Real. Because you're laying down the foundation in decisions that you make that you will play out for the rest of your life. What is the parable of the talents about? It's about the fact that in principle, God says in this life, you have to have increase. And if you have a lot of increase, that's fruitful. And if you have no increase at all, then you just didn't do your job. It won't work. And in a spiritual sense, God says, in fact, it's so bad, I'll take away what you have. A young person's life is heavily impacted by who they choose for their friends. Who they choose to be with. I've mentioned this before, but I think it bears repeating. A couple years ago at Challenger Camp, the question was asked to the teens and young adults who were there, what was the toughest thing they faced? What were the challenges that put the most pressure on them? And they said almost across the board that it came from their friends. That it was their friends who wanted them to compromise. It was their friends who wanted them to maybe fudge. It was their friends who wanted them to kind of try something they shouldn't. And they had to resist it. And I said, then why do we have these friends? And the answer came back privately, well, we want to be accepted. So you have to go from wanting to be accepted to being willing to do what you must no matter what, and that's growing up. That's growing up. When you are no longer dependent on your peers for your own opinion of yourself, that's growing up. And when you will do what is right because you know it is and because it works. Two are better than one. A friend is a great help and a great assistance. But if you pick the wrong friends, they will truly drag you down. The older people that I called in the congregation said they should listen to us. They should ask us for some advice, and they should listen to us. Young adults, make friends with people who are older than you. Talk to them in a way that you begin to have a personal relationship, and make friends with them, and they will advise you. Not because you ask them a question on paper, but because they will simply tell you what it is like. Guy and I went up to see Helen Duke this week. I had an appointment that canceled, and the afternoon opened up, and I hadn't been up there for a while, and so it was a rush because you have to catch her at the right time. She's 100 years old, and she's not always sitting there bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. And so if you can catch her right at 6:30, it's after her meal. She's up, and she's very alert, and you can talk. And the time was like 3:30 when the day opened up, and I called, and I said, let's go. Now, I will embarrass Guy by saying this, but you know why I like to jump in the car like that, and I'll have Guy jump in, and we'll go. One, he's free. But when we're traveling, he'll just talk and tell me things. And what he says is true. And so I'm sitting here going to visit Helen, and yet Guy is effectively counseling me. Now, he doesn't look at it that way, but I'm telling you, that's the reality. And I enjoy that. I would have to say to our young adults, make friends with those who are older than you in such a way socially so that you're just with them from time to time and they will counsel you. Not because you asked them a question, but simply in the exchange of thoughts, they will counsel you in your ways. It's valuable. Use it well. Do not set that aside and fail to take advantage of it. Probably the most important friendship that we will ever make is the friendship we make with the person that we ultimately marry. And obviously who we marry has a huge impact on our life. Men need to prepare in advance to be a husband and a father, because somehow the babies do come along, and a provider. We have a society where just everybody works and everybody provides and everybody shares and everybody does the dishes and everybody raises the kids. Men need to prepare to be the provider. Women need to prepare to be a wife and a mother and a homemaker. I'm not saying women can't work. My wife substitutes in the school system. But she's a homemaker. And she keeps her focus on our kids. I usually just drink and gamble and run around. Deuteronomy 24, verse number 5. God created us differently, and we have roles that we can play that are important, and they are not generic. They are not universal. Deuteronomy 24, verse number 5. When a man has taken a new wife, he shall not go out to war or be charged with any business. He shall be free at home 1 year and bring happiness to the wife whom he has taken. Now, we can look at this and say, well, the government shouldn't impose certain obligations on individuals in this circumstance. And all I can say is I can't control the government, and neither can you, but I can control me. And you're responsible for the decisions that you'll make in those ways. And I'll just say it this way. Men, young men, when you marry, set your life up so that your initial focus can be very heavily on building the relationship and establishing that marriage before you go on, which does not mean bring in the babies. It does not mean go off and travel on the job. It does not mean stay up all night till 4 a.m. doing something else because life demands it. Make those choices in advance. You're not going to take the year off. I can't take a year off. Nobody expects that. But put your focus where it needs to be. Now, there's counsel to the women in a little different way, Proverbs 14 and verse number 1, when it's coming from another side here. Proverbs 14, verse 1. Every wise woman builds her house. It's not talking about carpentry. Every wise woman builds her house. But the foolish pulls it down with her hands. And so there is a way to build that home environment that it is conducive to the marriage and to the family and to the security and future of the commitment that has been made. Proverbs 31. I'm sure that Proverbs 31 has been covered in various ways through probably in the retreat especially, but I want to address a portion of it. Verse number 27, you could easily build a sermon on this all on its own merits, but Proverbs 31, verse 27, she is not afraid of snow for her household. Excuse me, that's 21. You know, that's what happens when Perry won't loan you his reading glasses. The 7 and the 1 look about the same. She watches over the ways of her household. This is fundamental to a woman's nature and mind, the way she was created. She watches over the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and call her blessed, and her husband also, he praises her. Many daughters have done well, but you excel them all. Again, there's a focus there. I don't care if you work or you don't work. God says that you should be a keeper of the home, that you should build that house effectively, as it says, with your own hands. And it's not talking about carpentry. It's talking about giving your touch to an environment that would be conducive to the security of the family in that way. That's what the Bible says. Now, recreation is an important part of our culture. I think sometimes recreation loses its purpose. Recreation sometimes becomes an end in itself. We do not work to play. We play after we work. Some people literally go to work in order to earn money so they can play. That's not the purpose of life. We're here to produce and to contribute. We're here to provide for ourselves and our families. Recreation means to recreate. It means to rebuild. So it's a restoration after something else, after labor. A child maybe wants mainly to play. An adult cannot afford to take that position. One of the problems with recreation is too often it's just entertainment. Recreation has become a movie or TV or maybe a video game or maybe something else in that respect that is not a relationship and it's not real. Computer games are not real. I'm not saying they have no value. I'm saying they're not real. They're not a relationship. They're not going to build our character in that way. Recreation, in terms of movies and TV and computer games and videos, is what you do when you don't want to relate to someone else. It's how you fill your time in a personal way. And it builds, frankly, almost nothing at all. Some types of recreation portray war. I've mentioned that before. Some of the video games, the paintball and the laser tag portray war. How can we put our focus on those things and still say, God, I want you to be first? It's a fudge. But it's enticing because it's offered to us in that way. Find some type of recreation that you don't have to pay to do it. People used to actually occupy themselves with things that they didn't have to pay somebody else for. What a strange concept. Find some types of recreation that you don't have to pay to do them. Find a sport that you can participate in instead of just watch. It actually builds a relationship. It strengthens you in a specific way. An athletic skill, frankly, is not developed late in life. If you just decided at 55 it was time to begin to play basketball, you probably missed the point. It's over. Either it's already in place or probably it will never be. And so when you're young, you have those opportunities to develop your bodies in that way. When I was in college, I was on the bicycle team, and we went coast to coast, 4,300 miles. It was wonderful. When I got out of college, they went to Canada. They said, "Mark, come on, we're riding across Canada." And I go, "Hello, I'm working." And then they went to New Zealand. They said, "Mark, come on, come to New Zealand. We're riding across New Zealand." I'm going, you know, it's over. It's gone. There was a time in my life when I had the freedom and the ability and the lack of obligation when I could make a decision to do those things, and then there was a time when it was never to be again. Now, I've been blessed, my family's been blessed, because the church started a challenger program, and so I got to instruct and participate in a way that was very satisfying and rewarding to me personally. But it was something that came in the door, it wasn't something I was able to create. Because I was at a point in my life when I could not have produced that on my own. And so God indeed does bless us in many ways, but we need to use the time we have well. Travel while you can. Learn while you can. Enjoy the freedom. Use it well because it will not generally return. Don't be hanging in debt. Don't be using debt to buy consumption. Use savings to buy consumption. And I don't care what the rest of society is doing. The rest of society is breaking all rules. You're going to have to do things that create increase and multiply your efforts. The strength of the ox, the labor of friends and associates, or the investment of that which you set aside. You're not going to have what you desire simply because it comes walking in the door in the first place. It's going to be because you took what you had and built it into something more than what it had been. The early years of adulthood, the young adult years, are years when decisions are made that are going to impact the rest of your life. Ask your parents, ask the older members of the congregation, look at those decisions you have to make and use that time well.